What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I got to tell you, and I'm honest, I don't fake stuff here, right? Y'all know if I'm nothing if not honest. I yesterday celebrated my birthday a week late. And it was at, you know, at Money Hill with some friends, medical people, legal people, smart, funny people. We played golf. We were in a pool. I didn't see a minute of the Saints game because, you know what? It was like a one-day vacation for me, and it refreshed me, and I apologize for not seeing it. But Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk, I don't like to fake the funk. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you, brother.
So
I hear you.
So I didn't see it, so tell me what I missed.
I thought early on Jacksonville controlled things up front, offensive, defensive line. Saints really struggled. Mm-hmm. But they got into a rhythm, certainly in the second half of the football game. I thought Rattler did a nice job. He was accurate. He threw the football really in some tight window situations. There was a lot of pressure on him now. I mean, man, they were coming in there pretty good. So the Saints didn't win the battle up front. And still, you know, got troubles running the football. But I knew going in that just from doing some shows out in Jacksonville and just hearing the tone that Leon Coam had put a lot of emphasis on this game for the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. He sort of wanted to emphasize, hey, we're going to play our starters a long period of time and see what we got. And so, it was a typical preseason, Tommy, where you saw the some good, some bad. There are some players that certainly kind of stepped up to the plate and did a nice job. But for the most part, I think people are going to probably remember this game because of what Rattler did in the second half. And Tipton, too, had a good game at wide receiver. He made a mistake. He didn't flatten out that route on the interception. That was every bit his fault as there was Rattler, to be honest, and maybe more. He didn't box out that defender when he should have. But I thought overall, you know, it's what you want to see in preseason. You want to see young players play. You're going to have to play these guys this year. Disturbing part is, offensive line wise, you got issues there with continuity up front along the offensive line. You didn't see them have much of a push in the running game at all. And
we're talking about this. I don't even know who the starters would be now, I guess. I don't know who they start.
Well, who they gonna start or who they
started?
Who did
they start yesterday?
Okay. They started, you know, Banks and Fuaga at tackle. Mm-hmm. Ruiz early on, they ran a couple of stunts, and they seemed to be totally confused with that. Mm. Now, Bobby came on with us Thursday and said they had trouble picking up those stunts against the Rams. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me, that's a communication issue. Come on, you've played in this league long enough. You know they're going to do that. You got to adjust to that particular part of it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of raised the bell a little bit because this has not been a really strong preseason for Cesar Ruiz up front. Dylan Raiden started at the left guard spot. So, and he's going to give up pressure. He's not a starter in this league. Bottom line, he's not.
So let me jump in for a second here, because if they practiced it on against the Rams and they've seen the same thing, how can you not recognize it? How did Jacksonville do it a different way, disguise
nope.
it or something? But then how can you not? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand, but that would be something to do. Now, I know one thing, when it was asked to Kellen Moore after the game, he was like, we just got to do better with that. We got to understand that better, okay? You know, that's the polite way of saying that should have never happened.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back 6:20, talking to Mike Dettelier about the Saints-Jacksonville game, looking ahead to the next preseason game against the Denver Broncos. That's right, and Sean Payton. How could I not know that? Final preseason game, and then we'll see what happens from there. We'll talk about quarterbacks and more. Traffic now, WWL. 6:25, Tommy Tucker, WWL, recapping the Saints-Jacksonville game, and Tom Pelissero tweeting that the Saints have traded Kalen Saunders for an offensive lineman from Jacksonville. Kalen Saunders is a guy whose brother is a dancer with Taylor Swift, right?
Correct.
Okay. So he looked pretty good at times, and it's like one of these guys that makes a big play, then maybe not so consistent. Tell me your thoughts on that, and who did they get? An offensive lineman, Luke Fortner.
Yeah, Kalen Saunders was a guy that probably would not have made this team, Tommy. I mean, didn't quite fit the what they were going to do defensively. And Luke Fortner has a pretty good chance he wouldn't have made it with Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Luke's a guy, he was a third-round pick of the Jaguars in 2022 from Kentucky. During that time frame there, he started at right guard, left guard, and center. Mm-hmm. But his first two seasons, he was their full-time center. I don't know what happened to him last year. His technique work, his footwork, hand placement was all off. Mm. He got replaced. And so it was sort of a deal where, okay, I'll trade you because we need help along the interior offensive line. And they're sort of short bodies wise at defensive tackle. They've had some injuries there. So Fortner, I would suspect, is going to be the backup center to Eric McCoy, and I would move Torricelli Simpkins to the guard position. Mm-hmm. He played guard most of his career at South Carolina, played a little bit of center. But, Tommy, I got to be honest with you. If there's a surprise at a camp, it's Simpkins. I mean, he looks like he belongs. He's an undrafted free agent, a big wide-body center, but I'm really surprised how well he's played so far this season. He's aggressive. He's tough. Does he make mistakes? At times he does with his techniques. But, man, he gets after you, and the moment doesn't overwhelm him. And I think a lot of times for rookies that happens. Does not realize the jump from college football to the pros are. He just stepped in there last week. We talked about it. Mm-hmm. He stepped in after the second play. Hey, I got it at center. He started yesterday at center. So I think this will move Simpkins over to the guard spot, left guard. Again, see what happens with Fortner, who started out his career pretty well in Jacksonville, and it just sort of fell for him very, very quickly last year. And with Saunders, it was a numbers game, and quite frankly,
tell me why he didn't fit. Meaning what? With the 3-4?
Yeah, I think he's better in a 4-3 as a rotation guy, to be honest with you. And they've got Armstead. They also got Mason Smith, who grew up right down the road from me at Terrebonne High School, LSU, who they spent a second-round pick on.
You know about Jacksonville now.
Jacksonville. Yeah. And so he's coming back from an injury, and he's healthy now. So they needed some veteran people up front in the interior. And he's a better fit in a 4-3 than he is in a 3-4. And when you traded for Godshaw and then you selected Willie Broughton in round three, and Christian Boyd has played – pretty well. And he was a draft choice from a year ago. Sort of ran out of room for Kalen Saunders here in New Orleans.
You like the trade?
Well, you gave up somebody that wasn't going to make the team, and Jacksonville gave up somebody that wasn't going to make their team. So I'm going to give Luke Fortner an opportunity here to be that backup center. Will Clapp's on injured reserve. Mm-hmm. He's lost for the season. Man, the Saints have taken it again.
How do you fix the footwork or the technique if that goes off, and how does it go off?
That is just something that I see in linemen happen from time to time. They get a coach that teaches them a different way than what they've been taught before, and it's all awkward to them. And so then their play falls off. And Jacksonville's sort of been a revolving door for coaches, assistant coaches. They got the right guy. I think like New Orleans, I think they got the right guy as head coach. Now he needs players the same way Kellen Moore does.
Mike, you've seen it happen before where you got a player that's performing, producing. So what does the coach do? Get involved and start screwing around, right? And coach him down.
Have I?
The idea
I've seen a lot of it. That's why I say this all the time at draft time. Fit.
The idea
is so important.
To coach him down. The idea is to coach him up.
Correct.
More with Mike when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister with the call yesterday. Jeff Nowak on the sidelines. Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk, joins us today. Mike, before we get back to it, quick note that you guys are going to be second-guessing at the Silver Slipper this evening.
Yes, we will. Bobby and I will be there from 4 to 8 tonight at the Silver Slipper Casino, Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and see us. And I have a lot of talking about the Saints and certainly LSU right around the corner. And this coming Saturday, Nicholls State plays Incarnate Word Week 0, 12 noon in Thibodaux. Mm-hmm. And Steve Geller and I will be there Friday at the Wellness Center at Thibodaux Regional Medical Center, give you a preview of that game. So, man, football timing, finally.
Wait, who's
and
starting?
For college football is right around the corner.
Who is that you said starting? A high school game? What did you say?
No, Nicholls State is going to play Incarnate Word.
When is it?
That is this coming Saturday.
So the college football season is starting for them.
It starts for them in week 0.
Wow.
And it'll be in Thibodaux at 12 noon. National television for the Colonels.
Speaking of week 0, you got 3 weeks until you got a little bit less than that, until you got Kyler Murray and the Cardinals coming in. You got Denver on Saturday. I don't know how much we've seen of anybody. With the 3 preseason games, you do have a lot of time between 2 weeks, at least, between the Saturday game and then the September 7th. But how do you go about evaluating what you're going to go into the season with at this point, Mike?
I think for the most part, most coaches would tell you this. If with a 53-man roster, they probably right now could tell you 49 to 50. The back three is always about could we get somebody better than which we have already.
That many, you think? 50?
That many.
Okay.
Listen, I've talked to way too many coaches about it, and they'll tell you, even after the first preseason game, you know, hey, we pretty much know 90, 95% of the roster. Now, if we can add somebody that kind of can help, is say it's that wide receiver or tight end or cornerback, we do it. But we know most of the guys, barring an injury, that's going to make this team when we start the season. The only thing I can tell you is, man, did the Cardinals take a butt-whipping this weekend against the Broncos. Man, Sean Payton and the Broncos got some talent. And I don't know if they can break into that upper tier this year with Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City. But they edging really close to that category, and they got talent, and they got talent depth. Man, they took the belt out and spanked the Cardinals every which way but loose.
That's why I hate preseason, because you don't know. You never know.
Well, I know this. They got some talent.
Well, that you know, yes, but I'm just saying, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the Saints and the starting quarterback situation, I know I heard Bobby saying that the Saints would likely start Rattler because if they don't want to blow Shuck's confidence if they go 0-4. You see it that way or not?
Yeah, Bob and I have talked about this. This has some similarities to what happened last year with the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And they didn't start Drake May the first couple games. You know, they had a veteran that stepped in, and then after a while, he said, you know what, throw the kid in there, let him play. Mm-hmm. And he really struggled. Drake May really struggled those first 3 or 4 games. You saw a different Drake May to end the season where he got some confidence. Now, he's not a rookie anymore because he's played in enough games. He understands the game better. And him and I talked about it. I think there's some similarities here in what will happen. And I do think if the decision had to be made today, he would start Rattler against the Cardinals, and then Shuck would take over very, very quickly. He would handle that baton to him after a couple games. And that's similar to what happened last year with the Patriots and Drake May.
Let me take a break. When we come back, I'll talk about rookies, what rookies that stood out. And also, okay. I'm going to contradict myself a little bit because last week I was saying with injuries, you don't have enough information to bet totals. But, man, the total on the Saints now is 4.5. And I don't know how you can not take the over on that. But we'll talk about it when we come back. 6:51, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:57, 3 till 7, 3 minutes left with Mike Dettillier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. He and Bobby J will be second-guessing from the Silver Slipper on the beach, Hancock County, Mississippi, tonight from 4 until 8. Mike, we were talking about players, rookies that look good, or players on the bubble, and how you decide who the final team's going to look like after the Denver game. But I guess, really, if you're talking about except for three people, I mean, and 50 are already penciled in, who's on the bubble and where's the competition going to come in?
I think wide receiver is still an area where this football team may have to go outside the organization to add some depth. I'll feel the same way about tight end. Mm-hmm. Running back, Alvin, the offense is going to run through him. Mm-hmm. But Kendra Miller, and I give him credit, but yesterday he ran hard. Now, he didn't have much holes to run through. Mm-hmm. But, man, he ran hard. He ran aggressive. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think, has locked down a spot. And Velus Jones, who you could play at running back, wide receiver, kick returner. Also, I think you're going to keep four. Those would be the four. You're always looking for help along the offensive line. Also in the secondary, that's another area where, especially at corner, where you would like to bring in somebody else. So there's still some spots here, but it's, I think, much more so on the offensive side, the football, than on defense. I think your front seven, you sort of know who you're going to keep mm-hmm. and who you're going to get rid of. You got one more game. Isaiah Foskey's barely dented mm-hmm. anything as far as an impact at all. And you may have to cut bait and say, you know what, Chris Rump for us is a better player.
Got
from the Chargers.
Foskey, a second-round pick? I'm trying to remember.
Second-round pick, he's done squat. Mm-hmm. Virtually nothing other than help on special teams.
Mike, I emceed the Shaw Luncheon on Friday, and, you know, Jacksonville was coming to town. Somebody asked me if I could have made a 70-yard field goal. I said it would have taken me two tries. 35 yards at
from
the time.
From 35
exactly,
and 35?
Right. That I could have done, but not from 70. Thank you, Mike. We'll be listening this afternoon.
Thank you, brother.
Live on a beach on Hancock County, Mississippi, the Silver Slipper Casino. And Mike and Bobby D will be there, and it's fun to listen to these two Cajuns talk about football from 4 until 8 on WWL. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, about Mayor Cantrell's indictment. Then another episode of Bank On It, financial insights you can count on, with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. And we're going to talk about credit scores and credit cards and all of that with him. Today is August 18th. Happy birthday to my kid. And hot and humid today. Highs of 92, more chances for not raining than for actual raining, although we had a heck of a storm last night in Belchase. Then a chance for showers returns on Thursday and Friday, and you know how it's going to be. System off the coast of Africa, a wave that would be 2 weeks from now if it affected us at all. It has a 50-50 chance of developing. So it's nothing to worry about at all. But just keep in mind that we are watching it, et cetera. Rafael Goyeneche joins us now, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. How you doing, Rafael?
I'm fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. I see a story here. I'm going to quote from it. Sophie Kasikov and James Finn, NOLA.com, interviewing somebody near Lake Pontchartrain. And he said, they quoted this man as saying, a neighborhood activist turned anti-establishment politician, Cantrell once seemed like a breath of fresh air for New Orleans. someone who would speak her mind about problems in the city, whether people wanted to hear it or not. I thought she was a really good person at first, this man says, but with decisions you make, consequences come behind them. And I just wanted to read that because I thought that was a pretty good synopsis. I was one of the first ones to put LaToya Cantrell on the air because a friend of mine, after Katrina, was living in mid-city and knew about the work she was doing. And the LaToya Cantrell of today is not that LaToya Cantrell.
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, we're finding out the hard way. Mm-hmm. But her problems, you know, her ethics and integrity issues didn't just surface when she became mayor of the city of New Orleans. There were smoke signals when she was on the city council. So on the cusp of her running for her first term as mayor, it was disclosed that she had used the city council credit card to make personal purchases. And when someone was doing, I guess, some campaign background investigations, one of the other candidates, they disclosed the fact that she had spent thousands of dollars on travel, made purchases with the city credit card for what appeared to be purely personal expenditures. And just before she qualified, she wrote a check to the city paying back several thousand dollars, indicating that this is just an oversight. And we now seeing that, you know, those were indicators. And once she was elected to office, she had access to more money and more power as mayor than she did as a council person.
So at what point, this is what I wanted to ask you, knowing you were coming on, at what point did the mayor attract the attention? Oh, wait, let me rephrase. At what point did LaToya Cantrell attract the attention of the Metropolitan Crime Commission?
So we started getting information about her when she was on the city council. And what we do, we're a little bit different than the media. So when we get information about ethical, administrative, or criminal wrongdoing, we document it and we send it to what we believe are the appropriate entities. Mm-hmm. So as we start to get information, we don't really talk about it publicly. Now, you know, when the media sniffs it out and they get information, their first recourse is to inform the public. Mm-hmm. I'm a former prosecutor. I recognize the value of the element of surprise. Mm-hmm. So when the investigators and prosecutors are receiving information, they have somewhat of an advantage if the offender or suspect is unaware that someone may be looking into their wrongdoing. That's the reason that we send the information to the appropriate agencies and don't discuss it publicly. But if the media sniffs it out and they come and ask us about it, of course, I'll comment on it because that'll generate more information, both with tips to the media as well as with information to the Crime Commission that we then forward to the appropriate agency.
Your thoughts, you're an attorney and a former prosecutor on the indictment itself, 44 pages, I think?
Yep. And the first 24 pages of it go into rather explicit detail about the conspiracy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the mayor and Officer Vappi were charged with 17 counts dealing with wire fraud, obstruction, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, conspiracy to commit corruption. Obstruction of justice, and making false statements to the FBI and to a grand jury. So the government hinted at what was to come last fall when Officer Vappi was initially indicted by himself. In that indictment, where it was Vappi by himself, the government made reference in the indictment that they had the cell phone records of Officer Vappi and the mayor. So today we saw, or last Friday, we saw, you know, with great deal of specificity, not all, but a substantial portion of what the government has. They have over 15,000 text messages back and forth between the mayor and officer of Appy. That's going to be the evidence that they use and the reason that they were indicted. The government not only believes that a crime was committed, they believe they have sufficient proof to obtain a conviction and convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that both Officer Vappy and Mayor Cantrell are guilty of the charges for which they were indicted for.
Let me take a break. We'll talk about encrypted messages when we come back. And you know, people think they're going to get away with stuff. And I'm not – everybody's innocent until proven guilty. But I'm just talking to the general public here. Once you start dealing with the phone or the computer, you might think you got an encrypted app. But when push comes to shove, I don't know that anything can ever be hidden or destroyed unless it's – I don't know, unless you burn it or something. I don't know. 721 traffic now, WWL. 7:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Monday morning, August 18th, back with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafael, I was talking about the messages, the encrypted stuff that I guess they thought was hidden. If you're going to engage in any kind of conspiracy, if you got an electronic trail, is there any way to really make it disappear?
Look, you're going to have an IT expert on, but obviously whatever they thought they had accomplished, they didn't. So what I do know is that, you know, with any type of digital evidence, even if you attempt to delete it, there's a footprint and there are countermeasures to be able to extract it. A lot of this information is stored in the cloud. For the government to get and open up the phones of Officer Vappy at the time and Mayor Cantrell, they had to have a judge sign a warrant giving them the authority to do that. This isn't just a fishing expedition. So they had to go to a judge and put in the warrant why they were requesting permission to open the phones to investigate what a crime, what they believe were potential, a strong propensity that a crime or crimes had been committed. So there wasn't just the government deciding to go on a fishing expedition. They have to go through the process. So you're talking about the FBI receiving the information, obtaining the phones, going to the United States Attorney's Office, U.S. Attorney's Office, assisting the FBI in the next step, which would be to open up these phones. And that's where really the floodgates opened up. So everything that you're seeing in the indictment, all of this stuff is corroborated not by eyewitnesses or hearsay, but by the communications between Officer Vappy and Mayor Cantrell. And that's pretty compelling evidence.
So when it comes to the adage, I don't know if it's true or not, a wife can't be compelled to testify against her husband. I don't know if that's true. These two are not married. They're in a relationship. Can they be forced to testify against each other, or they can take the Fifth Amendment?
Of course not. They're both defendants.
Okay.
So they do not have
easy,
to.
Rafael, I'm not a lawyer. No.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. So, you know, they're
I'm
the
just
accused.
Kidding.
The government has the burden of proof in all of this. If they elect to take the stand and defend themselves, then they open themselves up to cross-examination.
When it comes to oh, that's right. I forgot. I should have known that. When it comes to the likelihood of bargaining this down, from what you've seen, is the case pretty, as far as you know, so tight that the government's got no interest in bargaining anything down?
No. So look, you know, 99% of all of the criminal cases are resolved with a guilty plea. So there's always going to be negotiations and discussions about, well, if you elect to plead guilty, the government or the prosecution will reduce some of the charges. But that's typical in every case. This is no different. The mayor and Officer Vappy have a decision to make. You know, they can either enter into a plea agreement, which usually suggests that their penalties will be lesser, or they can elect to go to trial and then if that puts it strictly in the hands of the judge to decide, after hearing all the facts, what the appropriate sentence would be.
Thank you, Rafael. Appreciate it as always. Rafael Goyeneche, we all saw this coming, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. And much like Ray Nagin, you know, a lot of times you think you're going to feel good when this finally happens. And I don't feel good. I think it's embarrassing for the city and embarrassing for everybody. And I wish it had never happened. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Bank on it. We'll talk about credit cards and more. Right now it's time for WWL First News. For that, we'll go to Dave Cohen. Here we go, 7:45, time for Bank on It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. How was your weekend?
Pretty good, pretty good. Sorry to hear about your lawnmower.
Yeah, also I tried to hit some golf balls, and with my hands and the wrists, I can't even do that. So, but I'm going to get it looked at. We'll be all right. Tell me about credit scores and everything and what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so credit scores, while they're on a very exciting topic, I think this headline is unfortunately exciting for the wrong reasons, mm-hmm. and that's according to Equifax, Louisiana has the 49th worst average credit score in the country.
And well, at least it's not 50.
No, it's not 50. That belongs to our friends over in Mississippi, unfortunately.
Again, a race to the bottom.
So our average credit score is a 680. And while some people may say, hey, that sounds really good, you have to consider it. That's the average. That's not the top or the bottom. And so really what I want to talk about today is just credit scores and what folks can do to actually monitor them and stay on top of them. So the first thing I want to talk about is what a credit score even is, right? Because a lot of people know, everyone knows what their credit score is, but they don't know what it actually means. And in essence, it's a numerical representation of how likely your loan is to go bad to the person who's lending you money. And so 680 is, we'll use 800 because that seems to be the standard. So we'll just compare an 800 credit score to, say, someone who has a 700.
Okay.
And what happens with these points is every 20 points, your odds of the loan being bad double. So
really?
A 700 credit score. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's an exponential thing. And so that's another thing a lot of people don't think about, right, is, hey, I'm only 50 points away from your credit score. That's not really that bad. But when you consider the exponential nature of it, it's actually really bad because you're 2.5 times likely to be bad. So a representation that I always show folks that's kind of a scary one to think about is we use an 800 credit score as a basis. Mm-hmm. A person with a 700 credit score is 35 more times likely to go bad than an 800 credit score. And, okay, that's not that bad. When you look at a 600 credit score, they're 1,000 times more likely to go bad. So once you get out of that 700 range, you can see why it becomes harder and harder for people to get credit. And
you know what I think is fascinating about this is looking at it from your angle, because we do shows on credit scores and people always worry about their credit. But you're looking at it from the lender's side, and that's amazing. If you have a credit score of 600, you are 100 times more likely to default on a loan. That's what I'm hearing.
1,000 more 1,
times
likely times. Than an 800.
I left
than an 800
off.
Credit score.
I left a zero off on my notes. Sorry about that, Jason.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Yeah. And you know, history has proven these numbers to be correct, Tommy. Mm-hmm. That's the unfortunate thing. And so it's important for everyone to kind of understand what these impacts may be. And so the obvious things, right, make payments on time, make sure your balances are low. But some other shocking numbers that I think everyone should know is why is it that Louisiana struggles? And a key metric that they use to measure credit quality is what's your mortgage defaults over 90 days in your state? Mississippi and Louisiana are both tied at 2% of their mortgage loans being 90% more delinquent. The next closest state is Alabama at 1.5. And when you consider that from a statistical standpoint, that's crazy. The national average is about 1. Mm. So this factors into a lot of things in life, right? Insurance considers risk. Not a lot of people realize that insurance is not just storm risk, it's also credit risk. How worthy are people for credit? And so these are all things that will impact people's ability to get insurance. And ultimately, it's just going to cost you a lot of money over the duration of if you were to borrow money or anything that you do. So I wanted to talk a little bit about credit scores, because credit scores today aren't really the same as they were, say, 10 years ago, right? The old rules were, you know, if you were going to do a mortgage, you paid all your credit cards down, you made sure you didn't have any delinquencies, and the minute they pulled your credit, you had a really good number. That was really easy. Now, credit companies got pretty wise to that over the years, and so what they use now is what they call trended data. Mm-hmm. And so your credit score is actually a compilation of the past 24 months of life for you from a credit standpoint. Mm-hmm. So if you paid all of your credit cards down right before you went to get a loan, it's not going to have an impact on your score like it used to back in the day, simply because it goes back and looks at 24 months. So what I want people to know from this is there's no quick and easy fix to credit scores, unfortunately. It's just like a workout routine or anything else that just takes time. Training, you have to do it over time nowadays, and that starts with monitoring, really. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people who I talk to about this get turned off by the fact that, oh, well, I have to go buy one of those really expensive credit freezing or monitoring programs. And the reality is, yes, they have great advertising and they tell you that, but everything you need to do to monitor credit score, you can do for free. So the first and most important thing, if no one else listening takes anything from this conversation, is to go freeze your credit. Okay. Mm-hmm. Takes a few minutes. You go to the three reporting agencies and you freeze your credit. That's going to stop the most frequent thing that causes people's scores to suffer, other than not paying your bills, which mm-hmm. is fraud, mm-hmm. which has run rampant lately. Mm. And, you know, a few years back, Equifax's systems were breached, right? That means all of our personal info is out there. So unfortunately, we have no choice but to lock these things down. As a percentage, you would be amazed how many people have not locked their credit. So
I haven't. That's the first. I have it. My hand's up. I should, but I haven't.
You should. You should. It doesn't take that long.
Okay.
And I can tell you some horror stories of people who've had their identity stolen. The amount of paperwork and time it takes to fix it is horrible. And so the other thing is to just simply monitor your score. Now, there's two ways you can do that. By law, everyone's allowed to get a free copy of their credit report data for free on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. So there's a website out there, annualcreditreport.com. You go out there and you just pull it. Now, first thing you always want to do is make sure that data is right, because there might be old trade lines that haven't closed. There may be data out there that maybe you disagree with. And so once you go out there and you take a look at that, the second most important thing you need to do is, if there's anything that's erroneous or that you don't agree with, is to dispute it. There's an entire process that creditors like me have to go through, where if someone claims that the data that we report to a credit agency is erroneous in any way, that we have to verify it and let the credit prove it to the actual credit reporting agencies. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you over time the people I've told to do this that have found plenty of things wrong with their credit, either old cards that didn't close mm-hmm. that were hurting their credit score, or things that were open that they didn't know about. Another common thing is if you have a similar name, a junior and a senior or a third, mm-hmm. sometimes your parents' credit may get reported on your credit report. Mm-hmm. So
could be a good thing, could be a bad thing.
To do that,
right?
Yeah, it could be, right.
You're rolling the dice on that one. Let me ask you real quick, Justin, before we let you go, and that is, so with as the odds increase of you not paying it off because of the credit score, do you offset that with a higher interest rate, or is credit just not available for people?
No, it is. So to some extent, yes, you do a risk-adjusted a change to the interest rate, right? You're going to pay higher interest. But at some point, you do fall off that cliff where the risk is so high, there's no amount of interest that could offset it. But so great question, and I can give...
Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say an example. I just pulled an auto loan, right, off LendingTree to use as an example mm-hmm. recently, and it compared an excellent credit versus what we would call a good credit. And the difference was about $115 a month in payment, or about $6,500 over the duration of that loan.
So when they say 0% financing for qualified buyers, that means you got to have a good credit rating.
if you ever listen, it says well-qualified buyers.
Well-qualified.
They always put that in there.
So
they're usually looking for a pretty high number.
At what number? Is there a number where people should not even look to even attempt to get credit? Unless they're seeing Mooney the neck in an alley?
If you're in the 600s, low 600s, I would suggest working on your credit before borrowing, if at all humanly possible, because the unfortunate truth is anyone who's going to give you credit that low, you're usually going to pay for it. And so it's cheaper to just save up that cash, if at all possible, if it's not an immediate need, and then get your score where it needs to be and pay less for it.
If you're in the 500s, don't waste everybody's time?
You're not going to like your rate.
Okay. You do better with Nooney to the neck in the alley. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate your time. Very valuable information. That's Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Bank on it. Financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields. We'll take a break. Come back. 7:55. Traffic now. WWL. All right, so hot and humid, not as much of a chance for showers as we'll have on Wednesday for both today and tomorrow. System out in the Atlantic, 50-50 shot at developing. It would be almost 2 weeks before it hits us, which somebody texted and reminded me would be around the 29th of August, but that's traditionally when we hit the peak of hurricane season. It's been quiet so far, so let's keep hoping. That's all we can do. Dane Cialino joins us now, professor of law at Loyola. Good morning, Dane. How are you?
Fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm looking at this 44-page indictment. Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vappi, you know, before I get your take on it, how uncommon is it to have pictures in an indictment, or is that common?
Yeah, that is a relatively new thing, the last 5 or 6 years. So you certainly didn't see that 20 years ago, mm-hmm. but with everyone having cell phones and taking pictures of everything, federal prosecutors get that, and people love to see pictures, and I think the pictures tell part of the government's story here, and they are and they're persuasive.
What I want to ask is not, I don't mean to dwell on this a lot, but back in the day, if you had mobsters meeting or something, would they have actual photographs included in the indictment or not?
No. Okay. Even if the FBI was taking old film camera pictures mm-hmm. of mobsters going into some restaurant, those never appeared in indictments.
So it's the technology that allows it?
Exactly.
I got
and in legal briefs, lawyers are putting pictures and excerpts of documents, and it's very common these days.
Okay. So when it comes to the indictment, your thoughts on what you read?
Well, I think nothing surprising here, actually. That's the biggest surprise, is that the government has waited more than a year after indicting Vappi and Farrell, and now almost a year later they're indicting Mayor Cantrell for virtually the same things that were raised in those indictments a year ago. Mm-hmm. So the biggest surprise to me is the delay, and I guess the question is why did the government indict them so quickly and took so long to indict her?
Is it a pretty solid case as you see this?
Well, every time you read an indictment, it sure seems solid mm-hmm. because that's the government's best case laid out with no response or ability to counteract any of the allegations from the defendant. But the evidence to me seems fairly compelling. And as you've already noted, there are pictures and quotes from various WhatsApp messages between Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vappi. They have all the payroll records, obviously, that show that Officer Vappi was paid over $70,000. For essentially private time with the mayor. So it when you're a criminal defense lawyer and you are defending a federal criminal matter, you've lost by the time it's gone to indictment typically. Mm-hmm. It's the rare case where a defendant is indicted in federal court and winds up beating the charges at trial.
So in this case, the defense attorneys would probably be more involved with coming to some type of settlement?
Well, that's always the case. There's always going to be a time for plea negotiations, and I'm sure there's already been discussions of mm-hmm. that. And the mayor obviously was not interested in doing it on a pre-indictment basis. But, yeah, I mean, the feds no doubt are still going to try to flip Vappi, try to flip Farrell. get testifying witnesses against her. But even without them, they've got plenty of evidence, pictures, documents, WhatsApp messages to make their case. And it's a case not only about underlying wrongdoing, misuse of city funds, but also the cover-up afterwards, which is, as we always say, is almost is sometimes worse than the underlying crime. And here the cover-up makes them both appear to be guilty.
Do you ever scratch your head sometimes, Dane, as a professor of law, and the fact that, you know, I'm just a dumb guy from the West Bank, and I know that it's the cover-up that gets you, that people still get themselves in trouble trying to cover it up when they don't realize that it'd be better just to fess up right away?
Well, it's human nature. Whether you're 5 years old and you're caught taking cookies in the kitchen, it's just human nature to try to not get punished for it. And that's what happened here. And but in today's world, back to modern technology, in today's world, everything is available on our phones, and it doesn't go away, even though we like to think it does. So and again, they knew this was coming. They have text WhatsApp messages where they're trying to talk about using WhatsApp for encrypted messages, and they did encrypt a lot of the messages, thousands and thousands of messages, according to the government's allegations. But there were some that were not encrypted, and that's going to the jury's going to hear about those.
Did they break down any that were encrypted, Dane? Do you know?
I don't believe so. But they've got talk or chatter on the unencrypted messages about how they need to switch over to encrypted messaging. So what the jury will never hear, or probably, are those encrypted messages, and maybe just knowing there were thousands and thousands of them will itself be damning.
Yeah, let me take a break here. We'll pick it up when we come back, because I want to talk to you about what the jury will hear and what they won't if it does indeed go to trial. Dane Cialino is our guest, professor of law at Loyola, breaking down the legal angle of the mayor's indictment that happened on Friday evening, afternoon, 44 pages of it, 820, traffic now, WWL. 8:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker back with our friend Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, walking us through the LaToya Cantrell and Paul Vappi indictment, Jeffrey Paul Vappi indictment. When it comes, Dane, to the indictment itself, and I don't want to hurt myself here talking about criminal procedure, but does the jury get to hear everything that the grand jury did, or do they get to read the indictment? Is everything in the indictment admissible?
Typically, the very first thing that's done in a criminal trial is that the indictment, which is the formal allegation of criminal wrongdoing, is read to the jury, and then the government proceeds with its evidence. The indictment, of course, is not evidence; it's just an allegation. But presumably the government has all the evidence underlying the allegations that it will present to the jury.
So somebody texted in, I think it is important, 44 pages of indictment. What at the end of it all is Mayor Cantrell charged with? What is Officer Vappi charged with?
They're both charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and then a number of substantive counts of wire fraud. And then the obstruction-related charges, which include obstruction of justice, and then just straight-up lying to the FBI.
Jim Brown, former insurance commissioner, if I remember correctly, he went to jail, and people think it was about graft or this, that, the other thing. He went to jail for lying to an FBI agent, correct?
Yeah, and that's unusual. If you lie to an NOPD officer, that's not a crime, but Congress has made it a crime to make a false, unsworn statement to the FBI. And a number of people think that shouldn't be a crime. It should be a crime only if it's if you're lying, but for example, before a grand jury under oath, that's perjury. But it is a crime, and both Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vappi have been charged with it.
And I'm not taking up for either one of them. That's not the point. But when it comes to being interviewed by an FBI agent, you can get in trouble just for kind of contradicting yourself, whether you're knowingly doing it or knowingly trying to lie or not, right?
Exactly. And the real problem is the FBI doesn't record those statements typically, and they won't let the defendant record those statements. So it's
based on notes, right? A 302 interview?
Based on notes. And it's often becomes the he said, she said, as it did in the James Brown case, where he said, I didn't say those things to the agent. And the agent said, yes, you did. And, of course, there are no recordings to prove who's right or wrong, and it just becomes a credibility question before the jury.
Is it they call it a 302 interview, is that it, where the FBI agent just takes notes? Or maybe
the 302 is the official FBI form that they use to record to memorialize what was said in a meeting.
Okay. Let me talk about the timeline on all of this. I guess now they both have to be arraigned, and then from there we set a trial date or what? Tell me how this plays out.
Yeah, they'll be arraigned before a magistrate judge in federal court. The magistrate judge, the matter's already been assigned to a district judge, Wendy Vitter. Then the court will set a trial date, and there'll be discovery where all of the evidence is turned over to the defendants. And nothing moves quickly, as we all know, although a trial date will probably be set something on the order of 3 to 5 months out. It's never going to happen. It almost never does. And I don't expect this case to go to trial until after Mayor Cantrell is long gone from City Hall.
Ironically, considering that this is based on travel, do you think they'll have to surrender their passports or not?
Typically, they do. I don't know whether in this case that'll be a condition of pretrial release or not. It probably shouldn't be. I don't think either one of them is a real international flight risk.
I don't think so either, but they have shown a proclivity to travel, right?
They have indeed.
Thank you, Dane. I appreciate it. Dane Cilino, professor of law at Loyola. When we come back, we're going to talk to J.P. Morrell about Airbnbs and what's going on with them. We haven't spoken about this in a long time, but it has not gone away. We'll talk about what the current regulations say, what's currently happening with Airbnb listings, and more. Then, in 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk to Mae Scott, medical director and owner of Kronos Wellness. They're saying these GLP weight loss drugs could be the everything drug. What? We'll find out when we come back. WWL. 844, 16 till 9. We're back. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by City Council member J.P. Morrell. How you doing, J.P.?
I'm good. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm all right. Had a good weekend, did you?
Yeah, it was not eventful.
You cut your own grass or not?
No.
Man, it's good.
Good for you. Yeah. I have allergies. I get hay fever if I cut my own grass.
That's one of those things I just can't bring myself to divest myself of, and I wish I could because, man, 5 hours is brutal. Let's talk about Airbnbs. I kind of lost track of this whole thing because I don't know where the rules are, what kicked in. Where do we stand now as far as Airbnbs in Orleans Parish, JP?
Well, the big development was on August 1st, platform accountability kicked in. Now, what platform accountability means is for years, what Airbnb would do in particular is if we would find an illegal Airbnb and we would tell Airbnb to shut it down, they would take it off their website only for the owner of the Airbnb to immediately relist it. What changed on August 1st is we changed the requirement that Airbnb has to check whether a permit is valid before listing the property. And once we did that via an electronic process, there has been an almost immediate purge of thousands of illegal Airbnbs because now that Airbnb is responsible and there's a fine and a threat of delisting their platform, they are the ones now in charge of making sure permits are valid. So people who've been listing them illegally for years are finding out very quickly at the corner of FAFO that once Airbnb has to pay the fine, they're refusing to list properties that don't have permits. And it's been pretty dramatic over the last couple of weeks.
Somebody texted in about Vrbo. I've been on a couple of...
VRBO is owned by Expedia. Actually, Vrbo, Vacation Rental by Owner, they've actually been doing the purging themselves for years. So basically, when we tell VRBO that a listing's illegal, they take it off immediately and blacklist it. Airbnb was the bad actor that made us play whack-a-mole, and now the playing field's level because Airbnb and the law works so well that the moment we filed the law, Tommy, they sued us. We're in federal court right now with Airbnb because they're trying to undo the law because they prefer to have as many properties listed as possible, even if they're illegal.
But the law went into effect while the suit is pending? Is that what's going on?
Correct. Well, the law was passed, I want to say, in May. We had to delay it for a couple of months to make sure on our end the technological pieces were in place. They sued to block the law. The court is still considering their suit. And since there was no stay, the law went into effect. But Airbnb hates this law because their goal is to be unregulated, and they'd prefer to have as many properties listed as possible, whether they're legal or not. So their lawsuit's still pending, but since they got no stay from the court, our law is in effect currently.
I'm going to do a quick survey here with the Oakland Art Jeweler talk and text line at 504-260-1870. Don't ever text and drive. Do you prefer hotels or Airbnbs or Verbos or whatever it is? JP, when you travel, do you have a preference or not?
I prefer hotels. You get a consistent experience. And though for years we would try and do both just because it's two parents and three kids, mm-hmm. The hotel offerings as of late, as you know, hotels are trying to compete with Airbnb. So they're providing more like double rooms, mm-hmm. or more like rooms that are more accommodating for families. And
right.
That's my preference just because I know what I'm getting.
I know every time I've ever stayed in one, my kid likes to book these things and, you know, okay. But either something doesn't work or it's not what you expected. I have never, ever been satisfied. But look, I'm not trashing the whole thing. I'm just saying that's my personal preference. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, and the thing that really started to bother me a couple of years back when I stopped was they'd had that laundry list of chores you had to do before you left, and I was kind of like, I didn't go from my house.
Exactly.
House.
That's exactly
That's
right.
That's always been weird to me.
Do a load of laundry, mop the floor, paint the house, and also reseed the lawn when you leave. And I'm not going to do that. Thank you, JP, for bringing that up. I'd forgotten about that. That's another one where it's like, and then, you know, with the rating each other, everybody's terrified of saying, no, you can't complain about the thing because then they'll blacklist you as a renter and all. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? You're paying to rent anyway. So let me take a break for traffic. When we come back, I want to talk about what the law says in terms of who can have an Airbnb. How do you make it? How do you get listed? How do you get a license, right?
Right.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we come back. J.P. Morrell, our guest. Text me at 504-260-1870. A quick Tommy Tucker survey. No texting and driving. Do you prefer Airbnbs, Vrbo, whatever it is, or a hotel when you travel? 850, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:55 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, about Airbnbs. And my quick survey, highly unscientific, but it shows about half and half, J.P., half Airbnb, half hotel. But somebody said, if I'm staying in a city, hotel is the way to go. If I'm on the outskirts, Airbnb is more bang for your buck. And I guess depending on how outskirts you are, it might be your only choice. Let's talk about, in New Orleans Parish, who can be licensed to have an Airbnb. I see Tony McCauley's story here from NOLA.com. Got pictures of the 1400 block of Carondelet Street. The homes were recently built, and they're being used as short-term rentals. Thoughts?
Right. So after the ordinances we passed about 2 years ago, it is one Airbnb per square block. That's the entire circular block. If more than one wants an Airbnb, there is a lottery process annually. The exception process, the two plus the one, has been ended, so there's no more exceptions. Mm-hmm. And as far as commercial Airbnbs, those are currently banned. New ones are currently banned under an interim zoning district while the City Planning Commission studies commercial Airbnbs. So right now, the only people that could theoretically get one is someone who wants to do an Airbnb on a block where one does not already exist. And if more than one person wants an Airbnb on said block, there has to be a lottery.
So when you say commercial, that's like if you built five houses in a row with plans to have.
No, if you have a commercial property. It could be where apartments are. It could be a fourplex, could be a fiveplex where you have a mix of residential and commercial properties and it's zoned commercial. Yeah. Theoretically, you could zone one of those as a commercial short-term rental. But right now, we have an IZD in place because we have paused new commercial short-term rentals. while the City Planning Commission is doing an extensive study to see how we're going to deal with both transient lodging going forward generally, to really create a process on how we can regulate them or if they can be regulated. There's always the possibility that the CPC may come back and say, we don't need any more commercial rentals. The market's already saturated, and we'll just not have any more at all.
So I see them in Algiers. I see them all over the city where you can see, because it's like they're next to next to next, and you know from the way they're built, it's a short-term rental. You just do. So for those people that have three of them, it's more than one in a block.
Tommy, the thing is this. So if it's residential, then it would be very, very rare to have three on a block, because the entire square block, under the worst-case scenario, the entire circular block, could only have three. There are some commercial short-term rentals that predate our original legislation from 2 years ago. That could have been grandfathered in under the old council scheme. Those somewhat still exist, but they're the exception, not the rule. For the most part, what you're seeing more in the last 2 months, believe it or not, from the real estate market is a tremendous amount of properties going back on the market as people who have let their permits expire find out they can't get new ones. I mean, if you go through the Bywater in particular, the Upper Ninth Ward, parts of Mid-City, there's more property on the market because an out-of-town owner realized that he let his permit lapse and there's no way to get a new one, and they just dump it back on the market.
You think this will help with housing costs in the city?
I think in the short term it'll provide some relief, but Airbnbs are like one of 10 problems with affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the problems, but it's not the silver bullet.
Thank you, JP. Appreciate your time as always. I know Leslie Harris is very concerned with that as well. A lot of city council members are. JP Morrell, New Orleans city council member. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to spend an hour talking to Dr. Mace Scott, medical director, owner of Kronos Wellness. This story is talking about GLP-1s, the weight loss drugs, could be an everything drug to treat Alzheimer's disease, to treat all kinds of different diseases. Is it the miracle? Sleep apnea, seizures, bacterial infection? Addictions? We'll talk about it when we come back on WWL. Tough work. All right, thank you, Dave. Mace Scott joins us now, medical director, owner of Kronos Wellness. I'm proud to call him a friend, Dr. Mace Scott. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing great, Tommy. How are you?
I am okay. I had a great weekend, and I was actually visiting some friends and was in a swimming pool and got some very nice words, and it's all because of the weight loss drugs that you helped me with, as well as the testosterone replacement. But today we're talking about GLP-1s and some mm-hmm. news that's out talking about how amazing these things could be. Tell me what, in addition to weight loss, first of all, however you want to present it, Mace, do you want to start with what a GLP-1 actually does?
GLP-1s are the medication itself mimics a peptide that is produced in our gut that binds to a receptor, the GLP-1 receptor. That's glucagon-like peptide receptor.
Oh yeah, I knew that. So, I'm kidding. Okay. No, I had no earthly idea. So what does that mean in English?
What it does in these medicines bind to these receptors, which are found all over the body. And in some areas, like for weight loss, for instance, in the brain, it kind of quiets the food noise, the cravings that we mm-hmm. get. And in our pancreas, it increases the production of insulin as glucose goes up. So it's balancing your glucose better, bringing that glucose into the cells where it's needed for energy. And in your gut, that's where people are going to notice it the most, in the gut. It's going to slow your stomach down.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
So what happens there, you just get full faster and you stay full longer. That's not the only way it works. Some people think, oh, it just doesn't allow you to eat as much. Mm-hmm. But that's really not true. There's several mechanisms. But you're right. They're finding so many awesome things that this medicine's doing.
One thing I did see. I'm sorry, Mace, go ahead.
I was going to say, it decreases inflammation in the body. It improves cardiac contractility. Your heart beats stronger. They found in studies with diabetics who are taking this medicine versus those that aren't, the diabetics taking this medicine had significantly less heart attacks. It improves kidney function in some people. It improves autoimmune diseases. And, of course, there was a big study that showed that it can slow the progression of Alzheimer's.
Really?
So, dementia, not specifically Alzheimer's, but dementia, yes.
But I mean, it's kind of hard to determine, right? What's what?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's pretty amazing.
But so let me go back to a story that I saw about this in preparation of talking to you, where some people are under the illusion that you can eat anything you want and this drug somehow magically offsets that. But that's not the way this works at all, correct?
That's not the way it should work, no. Mm-hmm. And people who are doing that are finding they're having problems with the drug. You'll see all over social media there are people who say these medications cause muscle wasting. Well, that's nonsense. The medicines do not interact with the muscle. They don't cause muscle wasting. The problem there is that those particular people who are having muscle wasting are not taking in enough protein. And I don't care what diet you're on. If you're not taking in enough protein, your body breaks down your protein, your muscle. So that's a problem. But you also see in some people who are losing weight over a long period of time, they start having hair thinning or hair loss. And again, that's not the medicine itself. It's the lack of nutrients. So there's certain things that our bodies need, and we need to make sure that our body's still getting those things, the nutrients, the protein, vitamin C, the fluids. And if you're not eating right, yes, you can lose weight, but you're going to become unhealthy. And that's really what we don't want people to do.
My hair train left the station a long time ago, Mesa, a long time ago. No, but when it comes to loss of muscle mass, when people say that, I would hazard to guess that it might be a lot of maybe guys that worked out and thought that they had these big giant arms when they didn't really have the muscle they thought they had. Maybe they just had like maybe some fat, they just to say it bluntly perhaps. And then when you lose the weight, that goes away. And so your arms are not going to be as big. I hate to reduce it to that. But the bottom line is if you're going to part of any healthy plan is to include resistance training. Accurate or not?
Yes, it should be. Of course, resistance and strength training would be good in cardio, but I'd be careful with too much cardio on these medications while you're directly taking them. But
really?
Yes, strength.
Tell me why.
Well, because I frequently see that people are not getting as many calories and frequently less carbs than they were prior. And so they get out and try and do a cardio routine that they did before, and they just don't have the endurance.
Not any heart trouble or anything like that. No,
absolutely not.
Just you don't have the fuel to do what you're trying to do because of the way the drug is affecting you, which means you just got to, like any healthy, normal person would do, which is monitor what you eat and eat a balanced diet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
That would be best.
Is one particularly better than the other? Because we're talking about, well, you tell me what we're talking about here, because I don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Semaglutide and tirzepatide. Now, semaglutide is the medication that is in Ozempic and Wegovy, and tirzepatide is the medication that is in Mounjaro and Zepbound. So tirzepatide is actually a better medication because it binds to two receptors, the GLP-1 and the GIP receptor. Mm-hmm. You get more activity. Most people, when you're talking about weight loss, most people get more weight loss with it and less side effects or less nausea, at least. Now,
with
that's for the weight loss side.
With the Mounjaro or whatever.
Mounjaro, Zepbound.
How are you saying that? Tirzepatide?
Yes. Tirzepatide, yes.
Okay, all right. And the other one is still effective, the semaglutide?
No, it's still effective, and there have been a lot of studies with semaglutide for, you know, the things that we were talking about for dementia, heart contractility. All of those studies have not been done with tirzepatide. So, you know, there's just more evidence that semaglutide is healthier when it comes to, you know, other issues than just weight loss.
So I've been taking this now for, what, maybe 3 years, I think it is, maybe a little bit more, I don't know. And I plan on taking it the rest of my life because I guess if I don't, it's not going to I think there's a common misconception out there that it's going to somehow make you lose your food mind. And I've noticed when I did try to get off it about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, that it just reverted to what I was before, which is a bakery nut.
Yeah.
Just being honest, Mace, happen. Just keeping it real.
Yeah, that can happen. That we have seen some people who get off of the medication and they start gaining the weight back and they start, you know, with bad habits again. We have had plenty that wean off of this medicine and just do well, that they just needed to reset and get back to whatever their normal is. But by far the majority of patients that we're seeing continue at a level, just kind of a baseline maintenance level, and seem to do very well with it and have virtually no side effects at that point.
I would, and I told this story to you, and I'll tell it again, and this is true, to give you away the way my mind was wired before this. I had the Swiss confectionery on my phone in a contact, and I would order birthday cakes recreationally, and they would ask, well, what name do you want on? And I would say, name, what? What are you talking about? Well, it's a birthday cake. Whose birthday is it? Oh, Fred. Make it Fred this time. Another Fred, really. You know a lot of Freds because you were in here, you fat son of a gun, 2 weeks ago, and you bought a happy birthday cake for Fred as well. We're going to take a break. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm joking about myself and myself alone. 504-260-1870. If you got any questions at all, that's the Okunard Jeweler Talking text line. Don't ever text and drive. But if you've got any questions at all about these GLP-1 weight loss drugs, whether it's semaglutide or tirzepatide, text us the questions, and I'll ask Dr. Mace Scott, and he'll give you as many answers as he can. Of course, he can't treat you over the phone or diagnose anything over the phone, but generally speaking, we'll pass the information along when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWO. All right, 927, talking to my friend Dr. Mace Scott, medical director, owner of Kronos Body Health and Wellness. They got a nice facility in Metairie, and they got a wonderful staff. I think the world of them. They've helped me with weight loss drugs, also with hormone replacement therapy. But today we're talking about GLP-1s, and let me get to some of the text here. Doc, if I can, one says that I was told these GLP-1 meds can help with sleep apnea as well as weight loss. Is this real?
Yes, that... Of course, losing weight can definitely help with sleep apnea. One of the problems with sleep apnea is a buildup of fat in the posterior pharynx. And when you lay down, go to sleep, your muscles relax and that fat falls into blocking your airway. So that's a big problem. So losing weight alone can definitely help with sleep apnea. And there was a study that came out recently that did show improvement in people who have sleep apnea who took these medicines. So I'm definitely saying yes.
Somebody texted in, gained 10 pounds after moving to a smaller home, one story from three story. I would think there's a little bit more involved here than just going up and down the stairs. But what suggestions to shred the 10 or more pounds? And I know you can't treat this person individually, but it does go to, like, when it comes to the GLP-1s, at what point would it be? Let me just say it out loud. I was on my way to diabetes. If I didn't have it 80 pounds ago, I was well on my way. I was man zooming at 100 miles an hour toward diabetes. And I think this drug kept me from getting diabetes because it changed the way I thought about eating and everything else. Perhaps, Doc, you can go into a little bit of what these medicines do to your brain and how it can make a guy like me stop ordering birthday cakes recreationally and really avoid diabetes.
Yeah. Well, like we talked about a minute ago, one of the things they do when they bind to the GLP-1 receptor in the brain, it causes this decrease in cravings, you know, that food noise kind of calms down. And that's how it can improve, like what you're saying with the cakes and, you know, just don't feel like you need them anymore. A lot of people are also finding they really don't have the craving for alcohol anymore, which is great. It helps to reduce that. There are just so many benefits to this medicine, like we were mentioning earlier, the potential cardiac benefits, kidney benefits, decreasing inflammation. We have cardiologists that send patients to us, not for weight loss, because they want their patients on this medicine. And I'm starting to get more and more patients who have other issues. A good friend of mine's wife has irritable bowel syndrome, and she's had issues for a long time. She does not need to lose weight. We put her on a low dose of this medicine, and she thinks it's changing her world. Mm. Like, she says it's fantastic. The lack of symptoms that she's having now, and she says she can live a much more comfortable life. So there are patients that do benefit from these medicines that do not need weight loss or glucose control specifically. But, of course, they can help prevent people from becoming diabetics, that along with a healthy diet and exercise, of course.
So I was 80 pounds overweight, and again, I firmly believe that I would have diabetes by now but for this medication. Is there a number, Doc, when it comes to pounds where people should look into it if you're 10 pounds overweight, 20 pounds overweight, et cetera?
Well, we have to be careful with that. And because if someone comes to me and they say, you know, I want to lose 10 pounds, if their BMI falls within normal range, I just can't justify putting them on the medicine.
Yeah, because you got to define, first of all, what's overweight, right?
Exactly. Okay. What is overweight? And a lot of people do say, oh, well, I've got this pooch in my stomach I haven't had before. I want to get rid of that. Well, this isn't the way to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can exercise, eat right. Sometimes the hormones as you're aging can play a big role in where your fat is being distributed. So that's something to think about as well. But there are those patients who are overweight, you know, and just could use that little extra help to get back into shape and get them back where they need to go. And we see quite a few of those. And yes, that can prevent things like hypertension and diabetes and even heart disease down the road.
So when it comes to somebody texting about thyroid, does this affect your thyroid at all?
It does not really affect the thyroid. That's something a lot of people ask because it is one of the contraindications that you cannot take this medicine if you have a history or family history of medullary thyroid cancer. Medullary thyroid cancer is a very rare type of thyroid cancer. Mm. And they find that the descendants of people who or descendant of someone who had medullary thyroid cancer may have the risk of having the GLP-1 receptor in their thyroid tissue. It's a mutation that occurred, and they hand that down, and 27% of their descendants will have this receptor. And so we don't want to give them medicine that stimulates that receptor, and that's why. But if someone has papillary thyroid cancer, which is the most common, they can take this medicine. If they have hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, Graves' disease, any other thyroid issue is perfectly fine. It is not contraindicated. So it's very specific to that particular syndrome.
So let me ask about, as it relates to the mind of people, somebody texted in and said it's all a matter of discipline. But I like to think that I do have a lot of self-discipline, and I don't think I could have the job I have if I didn't. That being said, I don't know if it was the way I was wired up or what, but I just, again, bakeries, I don't care about bar rooms, I care about bakeries. So mm-hmm. Is that just the way my mind is wired, or some of us are just born differently?
Yes, it definitely could be. Our bodies are very complicated. Mm-hmm. And for someone to say, oh, you just need discipline or you need to exercise better and it's going to change your body, that is not true for everyone. Everyone does not have that ability. Some of it could have to do with these GLP-1s that we're talking about, the natural ones that are produced in our gut. So our gut has a natural production of the same medication or similar. It's pretty much the same medication that does all of the same things medicine does. It stimulates your brain or reduces cravings in your brain. It stimulates hunger. It stimulates motility or decreases motility in your gut. So that's a natural process. And there are some people who have less GLP-1s produced naturally than others. So it could be very easy for someone to say, hey, look, it's easy for me to lose weight. You should be able to do the same thing. But our bodies are wired differently. You can't say that. It's just not that easy for everyone.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back. Text us at 504-260-1870 if you have any questions about these GLP-1 weight loss medications. Somebody texted in about arthritis, causing arthritis, and losing muscle and bone mass. We've already talked about muscle, but I think the muscle and the bone are kind of related. We'll sort it out with Dr. Mae Scott. Our friend, we come back, medical director and owner of Kronos Body Health and Wellness. It's 9:35, 25 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:42, 18 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. Mace Scott, medical director and owner of Kronos Body Health and Wellness. Somebody wanted to know about, Doc, these GLP-1s, putting them at a higher risk for arthritis and maybe losing muscle and bone mass. And we touched on the muscle mass earlier, but walk us through that, if you would, please.
Well, it's basically about the same thing, that if you're on these medications and you're not getting the minerals and the vitamins you need, the fluid, then you are going to have issues. If you don't bring in enough protein, your body will break down your muscle mass. If you're not getting enough calcium and other nutrients, you're going to have problems with your bones. It's not the medicine themselves. It's about staying on an appropriate diet. You don't have to, when you're trying to lose weight on this medicine, you don't have to diet to lose weight. Mm. You have to diet to stay healthy and make sure you're bringing in the nutrients, vitamins, waters, and protein that your body is going to need during that time period. We generally give our patients a 2-page list of diet suggestions. We don't try to tell people to diet again to eat, but you definitely need to be careful about what you're eating and make sure you're treating your body right. So the medicines themselves are not causing that problem. It's really the lack of the appropriate diet.
I think some people get confused, and maybe the easiest way to put this, and at least I found it in my life, is that diet really is a noun, not a verb. Make sense?
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Because you don't, it can't be a temporary thing. And look, I've been through that numerous times in my life where it's like you go on a diet and you lose weight, then you go back to what you were eating and the weight comes back. Yeah, what else is going to happen? If you can, Doc, talk about the way your body metabolizes sugar and how, and cause somebody texted in about this, about exercising it off. It's all about, in a lot of ways, the sugar, because the way your body metabolizes the sugar with your pancreas, like, for example, three full-strength sodas with the sugar in that, how long it would take you to work it off, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you'll start storing a lot of it. You break that down rapidly, and when you put sugars into your system, you start producing insulin very rapidly. As that insulin goes up, the insulin binds to all of, grabs the sugar, binds to receptors all over your body. And then if it stays, if you continue to do that over and over again, that's where you have this problem. I'm sure you've heard of this, insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. Well, the resistance is basically where the cells all over your body are being saturated by insulin over and over again. And when your cells' receptors are saturated so much, the cells start taking the receptors away. And so insulin resistance is where you're eating so many sugars and so much carbs that those receptors are being bombarded by insulin over and over again. The cells begin taking those receptors away, so the insulin doesn't work as well. That's one problem, and that's what leads to type 2 diabetes. But also,
go ahead.
If you're taking in a lot of sugars, it's really hard to burn them by exercise fast enough, and you definitely don't want to do that at night where you're sleeping, because you're just going to start storing them.
And there are stories, and I never did understand this until I began this journey, of marathon runners that were overweight, which sounds crazy, but even if you run a marathon or not every day, of course, because your body wouldn't take it, or for most people, I guess, I hate to say every and all, because, you know, there are always exceptions, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is, even with that much cardio, because of the way the liver processes the sugar and breaks it down into fat, it's almost impossible. That's why you have to control it, and that's where these drugs are so important, because you'll never get ahead of the game. Is that accurate?
That's true, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody also wants to know about the cost of the medications. And here's the way I see it. If I had stayed on the road I was on, and my insurance does not cover this, but if I had stayed on the road I was on, I would have had diabetes. At that point, the insurance would have covered it, in addition to all of the other complications from diabetes. And it just seems to me ridiculous that the government or insurance companies wait until people get sick before they start paying, and then it costs them more than it would have to prevent them from getting sick in the first place. Thoughts?
Yeah, that is true. That's 100% true. But the insurance companies are basically the corporations, and they're in it for the profit, and they're in it for the quarterly profit. So they're not thinking, let me save money on this person 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. They're thinking how much money they have to put out this quarter and what the cost is going to be overall. But as far as cost, you're right, for an individual person, staying healthy is a whole lot cheaper in the long run.
You know, and that's the way I look at it as well, Mace. Scott, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Dr. Scott, I didn't mean to jump in there.
Either way, that's fine. That is fine. Yeah, and the cost of the medicines, it varies. Of course, the brand names are quite expensive. But in our clinic, we assess each patient and determine what is the best route for the patient. And sometimes we do order brand names for patients, and we still have compounding medicine available for some patients, for the right patients. And that is very reasonable. It is a fraction of the cost of the brand names. So it can be reasonably priced right now.
So when they say that expanding Medicare coverage of the drugs could drive up federal spending by $48 billion over the next decade, this is from an Axios story. I don't see how that could be true or accurate because there's going to be a lot of savings as well, right, on the other side?
Yeah, there would be savings on the other side. That's on the, you're talking about on the long run, though.
Yeah.
So
unless the insurance companies, I hate to say this, but you know, they'd rather people, we're not going to pay for it until you get diabetes, and then at that point we hope, you know, whatever, nature takes its course and we don't have to cover mm-hmm. you anymore. That's a hard thing to say, I know, but those of us that have dealt with insurance companies know that it can be a battle and a fight. What about long-term, Doc, strategy? I plan personally on doing this for the rest of my life. I don't see where anything's going to change because that sugar monkey is always knocking at the door. He's always there ready to jump on my back if I let him in. Does it vary from person to person?
No, it appears that most anyone can take these medicines for a long time. Now, keep in mind, these GLP-1 receptors, have the GLP-1 receptor medications have been around for a couple of decades in other forms. There's Trulicity, liraglutide, before the semaglutide and tirzepatide. And semaglutide has been approved by the FDA and used in type 2 diabetics since 2017, continuously in these patients. So we don't see any major problems for most patients. There are some side effects that some people have, but it's very rare. And they seem to be really safe medicines that can be used for long term.
I'm glad you said that because we tend to think that, and time flies so quickly, we tend to think that, YouTube started, a year ago or along those lines. But these medicines have been used for decades, so there is data about long-term effects. Accurate?
Yes, there is, definitely.
And data says, or doesn't say that they're, you understand what I'm saying.
Doesn't say, yes. So there are a couple of issues. Pancreatitis is one of the biggest problems. It's very rare that someone would get pancreatitis, but if they did, that's just inflammation of your pancreas. You would have to stop taking the medicine and no longer be able to use this type of medicine again. There is a case, from what I'm hearing, of gastroparesis. That is basically where your stomach stops moving, and that could be pretty bad, but I haven't heard of one personally. I heard of a lawsuit in Florida some time ago, but that is so rare it has not even made it as a contraindication with any of the brand names. And then there's some studies that are showing questionable ocular issues in diabetic patients, but you know, they're still, they need to do more research on that one. They're not sure.
But diabetes in and of itself can damage your vision, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know how you would separate the two. How would you determine?
Well, in this study that I was looking at, they're looking at diabetic patients taking this medicine versus those not taking the medicine. And they just saw more of the retinal issues with the diabetics taking the medication. But again, they need more data on that.
So you would prescribe this medicine to your family members, to your children, to whomever, who is close to you in your life?
My daughter is taking it, yes.
Okay, so you understand the point I'm making, which is every medicine has a contraindication for somebody. There is nothing that you can kill yourself from drinking too much water, right? So final thought. No, you can. Seriously. So final thoughts, Dr. Mace Scott, on the GLP-1s?
Again, they're very safe medicines. But we see very, very few contraindications or side effects with them. And the benefits just way outweigh any concern, even cost. So people are just doing so well, and I totally believe in the medicines.
There is something to whatever it is in the brain with this sugar addiction that it breaks. There has to be.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Very informative. I appreciate your time. Dr. Mace Scott, medical director and owner of Kronos Body Health and Wellness. If you want to find out more about the clinic and all of that, you can go to kronosbhw.com. But this conversation was larger than that. This is about the medicines overall. And I got to tell you, I swear by them. 9:53, 7 till 10. We'll take a break. Come back. Find out what Newell's got planned for us today here on WWL.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.